bill in the assembly. Where does that stand right now, and what is it?
So that is a piece of legislation that I introduced in the state assembly in 2023. Jabari Brisport, a state senator from Brooklyn, introduced it in the state senate. And it's a piece of legislation that would make it illegal for New York charities to fund Israeli war crimes, whether they be taking place across the West Bank or in Gaza. And the reason that it's necessary is that we've found that New York charities have been sending more than $60 million a year in violation of international law and in violation of the spirit of New York law. And we need to make that explicit now in our state's laws.
So are you going to run for mayor of New York?
I am considering doing so. It is something that is, in my mind, a possibility because of this very fact that New Yorkers are not just suffering from a crisis of faith because of corruption, but also a crisis of faith in their government because of a cost of living crisis that Mayor Adams himself has exacerbated. And when they're thinking about their inability to afford their rent, inability to afford their utilities, their bus fare, whatever it may be, they are looking for affirmative proposals that are clear and explicit. Those are things that I think I could offer in this race. And they're also looking for someone who understands that this crisis of faith is taking place across multiple levels of government and needs to have a vision that encompasses all of that.
And if you do run, that you might be running against the disgraced governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who was forced to resign and now may run for mayor of New York City?
Yes, and the issue here that we have to remember is that it's not just Eric Adams that got us to this point. It's real estate developers, big donors, the New York Post, all of whom heralded Eric Adams as the savior of our city. Those same people see in Andrew Cuomo the same opportunity to reap benefits. And we know that we do not want to exchange one disgraced executive of New York City for another disgraced executive of New York State. It's time we turn the page on these kinds of leaders and on the influences that brought them to bear.
And Mayor Adams claiming that he is a target?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, he is a target in the sense that he has allegedly committed crimes. That is the reason that he is a target. But what he is looking to do is exploit New Yorkers' rightful fears about government persecution and exploit them to apply them to himself, when in fact he is the only person that brought him to this place.
And finally, George Joseph, what happens next?
So today, Mayor Adams is going to have his first court appearance, and he's expected, obviously, to plead not guilty. And then we're going to have a prolonged court process as the primary starts heating up. So we're going to see what happens, whether Governor Hochul does really consider removing Adams from office, whether there's pressure on her to do so, who else is going to jump into the race. A lot is in the air right now.
We want to thank you both for being with us. George Joseph, investigative reporter for The Guardian. His article will link to A True Friend of Turkey. Eric Adams' bribery indictment reveals years of flights and favors. And Zohran Mamdani, New York State Assembly member. Next up, an update from Lebanon. Stay with us.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York. City that doesn't sleep, and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it. If I can make it there, I'll make it.
Anyway. New York, New York by Frank Sinatra. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We go now to Lebanon, where Israeli strikes have already killed at least 25 people today, including a family of nine in the border town of Shabah, bringing the death toll to over 700 since Israel began its indiscriminate bombing on Monday. Israel strikes follow a series of explosions involving booby-trapped pagers and walkie-talkies in Beirut and southern Lebanon last week that killed at least 37 people and injured more than 3,500. In an apparent flip-flop, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel shares the aims of the U.S.-led initiative for a temporary ceasefire, which has also been backed by France, by Canada, by Saudi Arabia, by UAE, by the European Union and others. This comes after Netanyahu had publicly rejected the ceasefire proposal and vowed Israel will carry on with full force attacks on Lebanon. Netanyahu spoke Thursday as he landed here in New York, where he's scheduled to address leaders of the UN General Assembly.
My policy, our policy is clear. We are continuing to hit Hezbollah with full force, and we will not stop until we achieve our goals. First and foremost, returning the residents of the north safely to their homes.
Netanyahu's remarks came as the Israeli military reiterated its troops are preparing for a possible ground invasion of Lebanon if tensions continue to escalate. Earlier today, Israeli tanks and armored vehicles were seen crossing Israel's northern border into Lebanon. Meanwhile, Lebanese officials say the number of displaced people fleeing Israel's attacks has likely surpassed a quarter of a million, with tens of thousands sheltering in evacuation centers, in schools that have been closed in Beirut and across Lebanon. Speaking at the UN General Assembly Thursday, the Lebanese Foreign Minister, Abdullah Bouhabib, urged all parties to agree to a ceasefire. He said the worsening violence threatens Lebanon's very existence. He said a U.S.-France-led proposal for that temporary truce was an opportunity to generate momentum to take steps towards ending the crisis.
Lebanon is living through a crisis that threatens its very existence. The future of our people and our prosperity are in peril, and this is a situation that requires international intervention on an urgent basis before the situation spirals out of control with a domino effect, making the crisis impossible to contain. It will be impossible to extinguish the flame of this crisis, which will transform into a black hole that will engulf regional, international peace and security. The crisis in Lebanon threatens the entire Middle East. If the situation remains as it currently is, and if the world remains immobile.
As the Biden administration claims it backs a ceasefire in Lebanon, Israel says it's set to receive a new military aid package from the United States, totaling some $8.7 billion. For more, we go to Beirut, where we're joined by Mona Fawaz, professor of urban planning at American University of Beirut. She's also an activist. Welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about what's happening on the ground with tens of thousands of people taking shelter in schools and other places, a quarter of a million people displaced? You yourself are involved with helping to house people. What's happening?
Hi, Amy, and thanks for covering all of this. So really, everyone here in Beirut is under, actually in Lebanon, is under extreme duress. Since Monday, we've had more than, the Ministry of Health just announced 747 deaths. That is, in 3 days, actually, more than half the people killed back in 2006 during the entire war. That means that people fled the south really very, very quickly in the Beqa. And so the normal trickle-down is instead huge flows of people who were traveling across stranded roads, spending hours and hours on trips that normally would just take 45 minutes. And of course, people are fleeing because they've just been watching for a whole year a genocide unfold in Gaza. And they've been hearing members of the Israeli political class and the generals repeating over and over again that they're turning Beirut into another Gaza. So that means that people are really scared, and Israel is pounding the south and the Beqa with one raid after another. And they're also deploying all sorts of tactics to scare people, throwing leaflets, taking over the public phone station to robot call people and issue calls telling everyone to evacuate our classrooms, our homes. Everyone was getting these calls on Monday and Tuesday. So it's really a lot of stress that you have to deal with in the background of a country that for the last 11 years have suffered one shock after the other. So that population, one in five of whom is actually still a Syrian refugee, has also lost 80% of its population is below the poverty line since we went bankrupt in 2019. We haven't had a president since for two years now, actually. So there is, we have had to basically try and help each other in a context which is really very severe. And as you pointed out, the schools are closed, our kids are home because the schools are being used in shelter. One in two schools in Beirut is actually a shelter right now, and more than 40% of all the public schools in Lebanon have been turned into shelter. And it's getting closer and closer to us. I mean, Israel does these so-called targeted assassinations, which sadly, much of the Western press has been celebrating, and they talk about Israelis' ingenuity. In fact, it's targeting everyone. It's touching everyone. Just yesterday, there was an attack in Beirut, and it wounded one of my architecture students, and a fourth-year architecture student at the American University of Beirut. So, I mean, these are not fighters. These are civilians. She just lived on the wrong street because Israel decided to do that. Last Monday's attack killed about 50 people. I mean, I guess I'm just trying to show the extent to which people are trying to get involved, make a difference, help each other, but really in a very, very difficult context. And yes, of course, most of the people I know are actually involved in trying to help people. So most of us are sheltering family members or friends or people we know in our own homes. We also are fundraising for the civil defense because Israel's been actually targeting ambulances, claiming that the wounded are fighters. But that means that the civil defense, which is basically the first responders, are losing their lives and their ambulances. And so we're trying to fundraise for them. We're trying to fundraise for medications. And because I work in the lab that normally would do a lot of urban visualization on housing and rent, we're actually really mapping the violence and then also all the schools and trying to coordinate the action of solidarity by showing where the schools are, who can take aid where. So as basically the university can play that role of coordination and support for solidarity movements.
Israel says it's warned tens of thousands of people, I think even the information minister of Lebanon, to move. They say anyone who's living near a Hezbollah facility or where weapons are stored, how do people know this, Professor Fawaz?
Of course, people cannot know where Hezbollah has weapons. And of course, Israel can claim anything it wants. In fact, they've been sending bombs in all sorts of neighborhoods and areas of the country where it's very unlikely that Hezbollah has any weapons. And the point is to basically set people against the party and to basically make it seem as if the war is just the result of Hezbollah's belligerence. In practice, there has been ridiculous videos showing people hiding weapons under their mattresses. It's actually really condescending picture cartoons oriented towards the Lebanese people, telling them, hey, you know, the person who hid the bomb under your sofa, do you remember that guy? He was a Hezbollah. This is ridiculous. I mean, people don't know, and that is actually increasing the fear. And it's basically meant to be divisive because the Lebanese society at the base is already quite divided on many issues, and also to put people under more duress, to just say, okay, we surrender, you can do whatever you want. No one can ever say no to mighty Israel, and it's sponsors.
Finally, you're a professor of urban planning. Can you explain the scale of the destruction in Lebanon due to Israel's attacks right now? You're documenting the frequency of the attacks, the demolition of infrastructure. We just have a minute.
Well, since last October, we have been documenting the strikes on a daily basis and showing where they go and how. And our evidence is very clear. It shows that Israel has hit Lebanon until last week four times more often and way deeper. In the last week, of course, the numbers have gone up the roof, and it is impossible to count how much of the demolition has actually happened. So we are working to geosat that, because as in previous wars, we will have to support the effort of reconstruction. But some of the villages on the edges of Lebanon are basically fully flattened.
I want to thank you for being with us, Mona Fawaz. Please stay safe. Professor of Urban Planning at the American University of Beirut. Next up, we look at the anatomy of a smear campaign against Rashida Tlaib. We'll speak with Prem Thacker of Zateo and Steve Neveling, an investigative reporter at Detroit Metro Times. It all started with an interview the Detroit Congress member did with the Detroit Metro Times. Then CNN got a hold of it. Stay with us. Holding the light through your finger, hoping it won't fade away. Darkness around seems to linger. It sticks with me to this day. To me, Nemesis. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We look now at how key members of the media have participated in a smear campaign against the only Palestinian American in Congress, a vocal critic of Israel, Democratic Congress member Rashida Tlaib. She recently criticized Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel, who is Jewish, over charges Nessel filed against 11 mostly students and alumni who were involved in a pro-Palestine encampment at the University of Michigan. The Detroit Metro Times reported the comments by Tlaib from an exclusive interview Friday, September 13th, saying Nessel's move was, quote, going to set a precedent, and it's unfortunate that a Democrat made that move. We've had the right to dissent, the right to protest. We've done it for climate, the immigrant rights movement, for Black lives, and even around issues of injustice among water shutoffs. But it seems that the attorney general decided if the issue was Palestine, she was going to treat it differently. And that alone speaks volumes about possible biases within the agency she runs, Tlaib told the Detroit Metro Times. Well, the Michigan District Attorney General, the Michigan Attorney General, Dana Nessel, responded in a post on X that also referred to a recent Detroit News cartoon that was widely condemned as racist and Islamophobic for showing Congressmember Tlaib next to an exploding pager implying she was part of Hezbollah. Nessel wrote, quote, Rashida's religion should not be used in a cartoon to imply that she's a terrorist. It's Islamophobic and wrong, just as Rashida should not use my religion to imply I cannot perform my job fairly as Attorney General. It's anti-Semitic and wrong, unquote. After this, the Metro Times published a fact check Monday, noting Tlaib, quote, never once mentioned Nessel's religion or Judaism, even though the newspaper had pointed out in its own reporting that Nessel is Jewish. Meanwhile, the smear campaign was picked up over the weekend by CNN's Jake Tapper. This is Tapper interviewing the Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer Sunday on CNN's State of the Union.
Do you think Attorney General Nessel is not doing her job? Because Congresswoman Tlaib is suggesting that she shouldn't be prosecuting these individuals that Nessel says broke the law, and that she's only doing it because she's Jewish and the protesters are not. That's quite an accusation. Do you think it's true?
Like I said, Jake, I'm not going to get in the middle of this.
Even as Governor Whitmer refused to take the bait, CNN correspondent Dana Bash also accused Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of anti-Semitism. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Washington, D.C., Prem Tucker is with us, political correspondent, columnist for Zateo News, whose recent piece is headlined Anatomy of a Smear Campaign Against Rashida Tlaib. And in Detroit, we're joined by Steve Neveling, investigative reporter at Detroit Metro Times, who wrote the story this week, headline, Fact Check, Tlaib did not say Nessel charged pro-Palestinian protesters because she's Jewish. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Steve Neveling, let's begin with you, since that's where it started. Talk about your initial interview with Rashida Tlaib, and then how it was characterized, and the fact check you've tried to do since then.
Well, yeah, I wanted to talk to Rashida Tlaib as the only Palestinian American in Congress, and I wanted to find out what she thought of Dana Nessel's decision to arrest or to charge these 11 protesters, because it was so unusual. And we talked for about 20 minutes in a phone interview, and it was very clear to me during our discussion that she was talking about when she was talking about a bias in the Attorney General's office, she was talking about an anti-Palestinian bias. What she pointed out was something that's very common across many institutions in America, many of which aren't led by Jewish people. So she wasn't ever making this sort of issue of what Dana Nessel's religion was. She was just saying that there's this anti-Palestinian bias, and pointed out that in the 6 years that Dana Nessel has been Attorney General, she has never once charged a protester for anything. And I've been to dozens of protests in the last 6 years. A lot of them had civil disobedience that was a lot more severe than what we saw at the University of Michigan. So it was very bizarre. And I wanted to find out what Rashida Tlaib thought about that. And we had the interview, and I thought it went well. I wrote the story, and then the next thing we know, it ends up getting misinterpreted and lies are peddled and it gets out of control.
Well, talk about how that happened. Talk about the interviews on CNN and then what you tried to do with your tweets, with your articles.
Yeah, I started seeing messages from Jewish groups, from ADL, from a state lawmaker, from people saying this was anti-Semitic. She's saying that Rashida Tlaib is saying that Dana Nessel is only doing this because she's Jewish. And then CNN picked it up, and Jake Tapper was saying, that this actually happened. This is what she said. And she never said it. So I felt an obligation, and I felt some of a responsibility because my story was being misinterpreted, and Rashida Tlaib, as a result, was getting labeled as an anti-Semite. So I thought it was my responsibility to let CNN know, to let all these other people know that this is not at all what happened. She's talking about an anti-Palestinian bias. And I went on Twitter, on Jake Tapper's page, and on some of the other reporters' pages and said, this is what happened. We wrote a fact check saying this is not at all what happened. And it took a good 24 hours after that before CNN decided to say, okay, yeah, we made an error. But by then, the damage had already been done. You have Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, getting accused of being an anti-Semite, which really diminishes what she says about this this war. So, I mean, it was a very unusual, surreal experience for me as a journalist to see so many lies being peddled about an interview that I witnessed and people saying that something happened that I know didn't happen.
Prem Tucker of Zateo, can you take it from there on a national level, watching this story unfold with the reporter himself trying to correct the record, saying that the congressmember who he interviewed never mentioned what CNN and others said she did, and then trying to bring the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, into this?
Thank you, Amy and Steve. It's a pleasure to be here with you, too. It's, yeah, I mean, Seeing it from the D.C. perspective, it was remarkable to watch the timeline and events unfold sequentially. This started out, actually, a day before Steve's interview when Representative Tlaib appeared at a Black Palestine Solidarity panel when the charges by Nestle were announced minutes before this panel. So during the panel, Representative Rashida Tlaib speaks out against them. She sort of criticizes Dana Nestle for not bringing to charges charges against those involved with the Flint water crisis, but nevertheless choosing to do so here. As Steve mentions, also contrasting that with other civil disobedience and other civil actions where people were not charged. Notably, too, is that, as I believe Steve noted, too, that Representative Tlaib was also suggesting that perhaps there might have been pressure from the university. And so over and over again, it seemed that Representative Tlaib was referring to broader systematic forces that are, as Steve says, anti-Palestinian. But again, the timeline itself is also quite striking. So there's the panel on the 12th where Representative Tlaib makes these comments condemning the charges. On the 13th is when Steve's story comes out with Representative Tlaib. On the 20th, a week later, is when the cartoon is out, when Dana Nestle tweets condemning the cartoon, but also condemning the possibility that or suggestion that she is only making these actions against these pro-Palestine protesters because of her Jewish identity. A few days after, actually that same day, is when Jake Tapper then asks Governor Whitmer about the situation and starts peddling this false accusation against Representative Rashida Tlaib. And then you see Jewish Insider report on that exchange, and then the Anti-Defamation League peddled the defamatory claim about Representative Tlaib. Then you see Steve putting out his fact check as more and more anchors and reporters continue to peddle this lie. And you just see this sort of unfold and evolve in real time, as I can only imagine Steve's experience as someone who witnessed this, seeing this story be misappropriated and taken out of his own hands as someone who wrote the story. It's very remarkable. And though some reporters have backtracked, some others, including the ADL and Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, have sort of continued on with sort of pushing the suggestion that somehow Rashida Tlaib was criticizing these charges on the basis of Dana Nestle's identity and not the anti-Palestinian bias that Steve speaks to, not potential broader systematic forces that are anti-Palestinian in nature.
Prem, before we end the show, I wanted to ask you about a story you've been following closely. Last month, your story was headlined, 200 Days and Still No Justice for Hind. It featured a video of the many times you've tried to ask the State Department for an update on the status of the Hind Rajab investigation. That six-year-old Palestinian girl, Hind Rajab, killed on January 29th in an Israeli attack, along with six members of her family. They were in a car. They were desperately calling to the Red Crescent and saying that they were under attack in a car. Two paramedics got permission to go to try to help them. They also were killed in the Israeli second strike, what the experts say may amount to a war crime. This is you questioning State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel.
So has the Biden-Harris administration followed up on this alleged lie by the Israeli government, or sought to confirm any of Israel's claims on the half-year-old killing now of this girl and her family?
So we are in touch with our partners in Israel around the clock on a variety of issues. I don't have any specifics to read out as it relates to this conversation. I'm happy to check if there have been any additional updates. But to my understanding, this investigation is still ongoing, and I will leave it to them to speak to the details of it.
So I had reached out to the Israeli government as well, and while I was reaching out to the Red Crescent, and they said they would get back to me with an answer, and that did not. After we reported, the Red Crescent said that
Well, it's really, I'm not a spokesperson for the responsiveness of another foreign
ministry. Given that, you know, this government gives them billions of dollars in aid, I imagine that such claims would want to be fact-checked.
So we will continue to engage with our partners in Israel. We ask them for additional information. We ask questions when we see incidents unfold, and we'll continue to do that. As it relates to this incident, I'm not aware of any updates, and I believe this investigation is ongoing.
That's State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel being continually questioned many times over weeks, months, about the investigation into Hind Rajab. You have 15 seconds, Prem. Have you gotten an answer yet?
I have not gotten an answer. It's been over 240 days of me and other press colleagues continuing to ask about the killing of Hind Rajab, her family members, the medics sent to save her, as well as several other human rights violations. and we have not yet gotten an answer.
I want to thank you both for being with us, Prem Tucker of Zateo News and Steve Neveling of the Detroit Metro Times. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Soca's first and second year social is happening soon. Join SFU Soca, the Students of Caribbean and African Ancestry, in the Student Union Building, room 1430, on Friday, October 4th, from 5 p.m. onwards. This event is for the first and second years to meet and connect with new friends. All are welcome. See you there.
You are listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.